The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.com.
Good afternoon, Pierre. Good morning in South Korea. How you doing?
I'm good, Mitch. Good afternoon to you.
All right. So what was your impression? It was good to see you back at work, by the way. How does it feel?
Well, let's put it this way. The Americans for 40 minutes were the better team by far. Slovenia had 12 shots on goal. The Americans had 24. It was utter domination. The goalie from Slovenia played outstandingly well. Jan Mrsak, as advertised, was the best player on the Slovenian team. He played outstandingly well the entire game. He even stood out when they weren't playing as cohesively as they started to in the third period. It was, in my opinion anyways, being at ice level, the Americans sat back. They had more than enough opportunities through the first 40 minutes to make that 3 or 4 or 5 nothing, and they just weren't able to capitalize. And Slovenia hung around, and then Mrsak with the goalie out, tying it. And then, you know, Ryan Donato, who had a tremendous night. I don't know if you got a chance to watch much of it, but he had a tremendous, tremendous night. He had a bad mistake. I mean, he turned a puck over deep on an offensive opportunity, fell down, and then he didn't get back in proper coverage, and his man Mrsak eventually scored.
But how did you feel?
Me, personally?
Yeah, it's your first night back.
I'm so excited to be back working. So excited to be back.
And so what did you learn, if anything, from last night?
Well, I learned that Troy Terry, Ryan Donato, Jordan Greenway, three young players on Team USA, they're going to play in the NHL sooner rather than later. I also learned that the Americans are a really quick team, but I learned that Slovenia has so much character and so much heart and guys that really care about one another. It showed you again, as we've talked about so many times, this sport's not about numbers. It's about character. It's about commitment. It's about coachability. And the Slovenian team stood up for all those things and eventually won the game.
All right. And your next assignment?
Not very long. USA women versus Canada women. I'm going right back to the rink.
Yeah. And what is the expectation level there? How much is NBC playing this up, considering who it is?
They're playing it up huge. Part of it, it's not really needed to be played up because of what's gone on since 1998. In 98, the Americans won in a major upset at the time and kind of put their program on the map. And then if you go to 2002 and Haley Wickenheiser and her amazing performance in Salt Lake City, then you go to 2006 in Torino, I was there calling the game. I didn't call it in 02 and I didn't call it in 98, but I called it starting in 06. And in 06, the Americans got knocked out by the Swedish team because of a great goaltending performance by Sweden. And the Canadians had their way with everybody and really a phenomenal team and a great performance. And then you go to 2010 and Marie-Philippe Poulin and the way she dominated the Americans, it was a tight game, but she was just so darn good. And then you go to Sochi and Kevin Dineen coaching, and he gets a break. The Americans ice the puck with the goalie out. He calls a timeout. He settles his group down. They score a goal to tie. Then they win it in overtime. This is one of those great slugfests. It's, you know, top-end heavyweight people playing against one another, and it's awesome to watch. It's not typical of what you would expect from any sporting event because I think the referees kind of just let them go. Do you know what I mean, Mitch? They don't get in their way because they know they're the two best teams, and they just go out and hammer one another. And I don't mean physically. I just mean athletically. It's phenomenal to watch.
I just think it adds so much to the enjoyment of the Olympics to know where we were not that long ago in terms of women's hockey. I mean, this is a bigger rivalry than, frankly, some nights in the NHL that when two teams, you know, that you think, okay, these teams have a rivalry. No, not compared to the women.
No, that's absolutely right. No. The women really get after you. It's cool. It's really good. And, you know, again, having watched both teams in all their games so far, I would say to date the Canadian women have played better than the American women. But what I would also tell you is it's two vastly different styles. The Canadian women are very aggressive on the forecheck. They play more of a straight line game. The American women play more of a crisscross, the old Russian KLM style of game. So, again, it's going to be really interesting to watch this morning as we get going here.
With Pierre Maguire on site in South Korea. Go ahead, Rod.
So how much closer or how close are we, Pierre, to having, say, half a dozen teams in the women's tournament in hockey that are a threat, not necessarily on par with Canada, the U.S., but close to it?
No, not yet. Not a half dozen. One of the teams that's made significant movement is Finland. But they have a goaltender, Ratu, who keeps them very close right now and allows them to compete in a lot of the big games. She didn't have her best game against Canada the other night. And then obviously Canada blows them out. But I would say they're making probably the most significant improvement in terms of the upper-level teams. The Russians took a step back in this tournament. The Swedes took a step back in this tournament. The Swiss have made improvement. They've made significant improvement, which is great for their program. The Japanese have made some improvement. And, you know, obviously the Koreans are just getting going here.
All right. Look forward to talking to you about it tomorrow with Pierre Maguire. So last night we had, it's funny, it came up fairly recently. We had players who were playing in a game and got traded. What was your first reaction when you saw this move between Ottawa and Los Angeles involving Dion Phaneuf and Marian Gaborik?
The first reaction, I'm not even going to try to lie to you, I'm going to be totally transparent. How much money is Ottawa making on the deal? And eventually it came out almost $5.5 million.
Yeah, you got to be a chartered accountant to figure it out quickly.
No, that's what I mean. But that was my first reaction. I said, I wonder how much money Ottawa's making on this deal. And eventually people figured it out, and I read it. It's almost $5.5 million. And then I thought about it from a hockey standpoint. And the other thing that I thought of afterwards was, you know, L.A.'s been trying to get Dion for a while. It started when Brent Sutter was there. Daryl Sutter. Brent Sutter, Daryl's brother, coached Dion in Red Deer. Daryl Sutter drafted Dion with Calgary when he was a manager and coach. And what's interesting is if you ever go back and watch the tape of that, Daryl Sutter's not a physically demonstrative person. When Dion comes on stage, Daryl hugged him. And Gord, Bob, and I were kind of like, they must really like this guy because that's not a typical Daryl reaction. And obviously Dion played very, very well early on in Calgary and then gets moved on to Toronto. And they've always kind of had a soft spot in their heart, the Sutters have, for Dion Phaneuf. And I think a lot of it goes back to the Red Deer days and the 2005 World Junior in Grand Forks, North Dakota, where he was just such a tower of power for Canada. So I'm not surprised it was L.A. The return isn't great for Ottawa. Gabrick's, you know, a little bit past his prime right now, but he can still score if he plays with an elite center. He won't score at the same numbers that he used to, but he can still play that way as long as there's an elite center. Shore's a useful player. Nick Shore's a useful depth player. He really is. And he's got character, lots of it. But Nate Thompson in L.A., they're very familiar with him just because of the time he spent in Anaheim and some of those games, and I called a lot of them the L.A.-Anaheim games, slugfests, and he was very, very good in those games. So I could see why L.A. did it, and I also understand why Ottawa did it. A lot of it was because of money.
Pierre, just you know, based on the side that Phaneuf plays, likely he plays with Martinez, maybe Doughty, but probably Martinez. And just returning to the Western Conference for Dion, do you think that caters to the way he plays a little bit more than playing in the East?
Yeah, it may. I mean, he hasn't been in the West for a while now. So Mitch Gall, I mean, that's the one thing where I thought of that as well. But it's just realistically, he hasn't really been in the West for a while. The one, you know, everybody's talking about the L.A. and they can't defend very well. They don't. One of the players they lost, and I'm not sure it's been brought up on your show, is Braden McNabb. You know, and McNabb went on to Vegas because of the expansion draft, and he's obviously been very, very good there and a very important player, and he was a bigger body that could really get in the way, and they knew him in L.A. really well. That's another one of those Brent Sutter deals, Daryl Sutter deals. McNabb played in the Western Hockey League, and the Sutter family knew him very well. So that they lose him, and they really don't have anybody on that side. It's basically Jake Muzzin, and then it's a potpourri of players. So that's another one of the reasons why I think they need Phaneuf.
Here's Crew, 11th among league defensemen with 35 points. In flight, Bergeron to the slot, he scores! He picks that spot with regularity! What a dish by Krug. In flight to Bergeron. Got a step and snapped it in. A power play goal. 3-2 Bruins.
Big night in Boston last night. They honored that 78 team with 11 20-goal scorers, and then the Bruins scored five. Patrice Bergeron with two more. 5-2 win over Calgary. They are 1 point behind Tampa after Tampa got beat by Buffalo last night, Pierre. And Cam Neely saying the Bruins, I think he's articulating and putting it on the record what a lot of people already knew, that they are willing to trade prospects right now. If you're dealing with Boston, who are you asking for?
Ryan Donato. I don't think they'll trade him, but I'd be asking for him. Anders Bjork, I'd ask for him. I'd probably ask for Jake DeBrusk if he was. Now, again, I hate putting those names out there because these are guys. You're asking me prospects. I could say, yeah, get prospect A, get prospect B. So I hate doing this, but I'm asking you.
Yeah, I'm just nobody's saying McGuire's saying the Bruins are going to trade DeBrusk.
Yeah,
it's just you know.
Okay, I'm glad you qualified that. Thank you. But one of the, and I will, all I'll say is they've got some underappreciated depth players on defense that I would be interested in trying to get deeper in a deal if I was making a big deal. But if you were to ask me to rate the top prospect they have right now, it'd be Ryan Donato. If you were making a deal, a high, super high-end deal, and you wanted a player, you'd try to get that guy.
So I mentioned 1 point behind Tampa. Pittsburgh beat Ottawa last night, and they have moved to within 3 points of Washington.
Right.
You see the Penguins overtaking the Capitals?
I think they're going to be very ready to make a deal, and I think Washington's going to be very ready to make a deal. This is going to be very interesting. I think you've got an arms race going on to try to stay ahead if you're Washington and to try to catch up if you're Pittsburgh. So I think it's going to be very, very interesting. You know, I'm obviously not there watching the games, but I'm evaluating from a long way away and paying attention to a lot of the things that are going on. And Pittsburgh and their better players, whether it be Kessel, whether it be Malkin, obviously whether it be Crosby, they're starting to elevate. Brian Rust's had kind of an injury up and down year. Gensel's kind of had an up and down year. But those guys are starting to heat up at the right time now. So I would be very, very wary of the Penguins. They're really starting to feel it. So if I were Washington, I'd get proactive. I think Pittsburgh will be very proactive going into the trade deadline.
What's the best way to evaluate a trade target? Let's say you're interested in a player, but who's maybe on a losing team and who's playing way too much. Let's say he's maybe a number three defenseman in your eyes, but because he's on a bad team, he's playing as a number one. What's the best way to evaluate that kind of player?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a lot of scouting time. I think it's also how does the player play when he plays against you. And here's why I say that. If you were to make a deal like that and the guys talk and say, oh, we gave up this guy to get that guy, why would we want that guy? He's not that good. But if that guy plays really well against your team and guys know that, that makes it an easier deal to sell in your room. And believe me, sometimes you have to sell it in your room. You don't go to the player and say, oh, yeah, we got this guy. You got to like him. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the deal has to speak for itself, and the players can't be moping around saying, we got fleeced. They can never have that. So one of the things when you're doing that kind of evaluation is hope that or know that the player that you're acquiring, he's got some street cred. He's done things against your group that the guys actually really respect where that player comes from.
Getting to the Habs in just a second here, but among the other games last night, Carolina scored 7 on those Kings that we were just talking about. Justin Falk with a hat trick. Carolina, again, is a very interesting team if they could get goaltending consistently. Do you see a lot of teams around the league who might be able to take Justin Falk in any kind of trade? Is he the most logical guy that you would target if you're looking for help on the blue line?
Yeah, he would be up there. Now, remember, Justin is, you talked about his hat trick. He is a big shooter. He can rip it, and he can make a great first pass. Justin's fundamental flaw, and it's not huge because it can be addressed, is maybe he's one of those guys Rod was talking about that's playing up in the lineup a little bit more than he should. He's not a shutdown guy. And he never has been. So that's one of the things you have to be aware of, and I'm sure people are when you go out and try to acquire him, if you try to acquire him. But he can really shoot the puck, and he can make a good first pass. He's an offensive defenseman. He really is. But he's not one of, you got to know your organizational need. If you need offense from the defense, he's a perfect fit. If you're looking for stopping power, he's not.
We understand, you know, we're still going to have to tweak our team here and there. But I think, you know, right now there's a lot of good things that are happening besides the fact that we're not in the playoffs right now. And it's going to be a tough haul. I think there's still a lot of good things happening with this hockey club.
All right, Claude Julien, that was after practice yesterday. We played that for you yesterday, Pierre. Today is the actual one-year anniversary of Claude Julien becoming the coach of the Canadiens the second time around. How would you assess his year behind the bench here?
I think solid. He's been able to implement what he's trying to do as a coach. I think the players have had a buy-in. I think the players realize that they're not nearly as good as what was advertised coming into the season. That's just the reality check of a long NHL and grinding NHL season. But I think he's done some really good things. I really do. Brendan Gallagher, I don't think, has ever played better. And I think that goes to some of the things the coach has done. I think Jeff Petrie's played as well as after a slow start. He's done some really, really good things. That's probably on the coach. But there's, again, when you're center ice poor like Montreal is, it's a really hard game to coach. It really affects a lot of things you want to do strategically.
Well, is there anybody anywhere in the world who thought that in February Paul Byron would be a Canadian centerman?
I don't think so. I really don't. I mean, I think I know the league relatively well, and I know most of the players' backgrounds really, really well. I've never, ever once fancied him as a center iceman.
I think he'd be the happiest guy in the Canadiens family once Phil Deneau gets back in the lineup, which will not be tonight. How about the team they're facing? This is a team, obviously, you look at the standings where they are. It goes without saying how important Nathan MacKinnon is to them. They won't have him tonight. The Canadiens start Antti Niemi in goal.
Well, Antti's last start, he was very good, wasn't he?
I mean, I
thought he was.
Yeah.
So that's a positive. The one thing I would tell you about playing in Colorado, I don't know when the Canes got there. I wasn't paying attention to that.
Yesterday.
Playing at altitude, coming from close to sea level, it's a chore. And at this time of the year, it becomes even more difficult. And I'll give you an example of why I say that. Nobody used to play in Colorado more than Detroit. And they would have, if they were playing back-to-back, what they would do is they actually would wait until the morning of the game to come in wherever they were coming in from, whether it be L.A. or San Jose or Anaheim. That was Scotty's idea after he talked to a lot of experts about it, because he found out if they would go in the night before or even the day before, their guys wouldn't be able to respond as well. They weren't nearly as good. They may have won games, but they looked sluggish. They didn't look nearly as quick. So that's something to pay attention to. And it usually starts not in the first period, but in the second and the third. And that's where that Colorado team becomes very, very dangerous, especially now when they're starting to feel it.
Yeah, Pierre, Colorado 19-7-1 on home ice. So a lot of teams have struggled with that. But they're in 6 out of 7 in that Central Division. And you look at the teams in that division. I caught some of the Jets game, some of the Predators game. That's the toughest division in hockey.
Oh, yeah. No, it's been that's right from the start of the year. I think everybody knew that was the toughest one. But no, nobody expected Colorado to be in this tough grind. They were all expecting Chicago to be up there. I think a lot of people thought Winnipeg would have a bounce back. Nashville was going to be very good. St. Louis was going to be very difficult. Minnesota starting to feel it. Most people thought they were going to be very good. I remember telling you that Dallas, I thought, would be the most improved team in the league. They're close to it, but clearly Colorado is the most improved team in the league this year. Those are all teams in that division. It's a bear of a division. It really is.
And to finish up, on the same day, they announced that Jim Benning is back for another 3 years, a new contract, multi-year contract for the Canucks general manager. Trevor Linden, their president, sends a letter to season ticket holders preaching patience. We still need to be patient, but I'm excited about our journey ahead together. And they want to be, guess what, Pierre? They want to be fast.
Yeah.
They want to be aggressive. They want to be fast and creative and exciting.
Yeah, well, they're on the right path. I think they're on the right path. I am a huge fan of Jim. I know that people in that marketplace look at some of his press conferences and they're not really appealing. He just doesn't, you know, that's not his thing. Jim Benning's an amazingly good hockey man. He's a tremendous evaluator of amateur talent in particular. And if you look at how, you know, you can look at how they're building their team. And you can look at some of the depth of their young players starting to filter into their system. Brock Besser is the best example I can give you, but there's a ton of other ones there that are really starting to flourish, whether it be at the American League or even at the lower levels. There's a young man by the name of Adam Gaudette, who plays at Northeastern University, is a fifth-round pick. He's almost ready for prime time. I mean, that's just one example of a high-profile kid that's not even in the NHL yet. But that's Jim's thing. He's a great evaluator of amateur talent. And I think that's going to bode very, very well for Trevor Linden and the decision of ownership, the Aquilino family in particular, just to go out there and sign him. I'm a big fan. I think Jim is one of those guys that's tremendously good at his work.
Enjoy the day. Enjoy the dumplings. We got your NBC teammate Gordon Miller coming up in about 30 minutes.
If he's up.
Well, in 30 minutes he will be. Rod will make sure of that.
All right. Well, I won't see him at breakfast then. Have a good day, Matt.
He wants you to bring him breakfast, by the way, Pierre.
I will not be doing
room
that.
Service.
I'll just put on a little dress and outfit and head up there. He'll be all happy. No, I will not be doing that. See you later.
Bye.
Pierre McGuire, brought to you by...